Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to Fansmanship.com podcast. Fansmanship audio, if you will, episode 88. It is Saturday. It is March 1st, and the 1st of March means that it is time to start talking about baseball. And we're going to have a few baseball podcasts kind of lined up for you here on fansmanship.com. And the first one is I thought I'd bring in the commissioner of my fantasy baseball league, the main one that I'm in. That league is called the player. What's it called?
Trash Talkers Unanimous.
Trash Talkers Unanimous. And there are two divisions. There's the Silky Johnston division and the Buck Nasty division. I'm joined by Jesse Pereira.
Hi, Jesse. Hello, Owen. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
It's always fun.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been probably since last baseball season.
Yes.
Jesse's definitely, when it comes to sports and baseball, Jesse's kind of on the in the know. And I think everybody right now who's a baseball fan is probably just kind of gearing up. I mean, it's March 1st. It's an exciting time of the year. College baseball is 2 weeks in. I'm hoping to have a national college baseball writer on this week. So we'll talk college baseball on the next podcast, probably. In this one, though, I wanted to kind of focus on some of the kind of random off-season stories that we've heard over the last month or two. And there have been quite a few that have kind of piqued our interest. One of those is that one of our friends posted a video of what looked like a ball girl going Spider-Man on the wall in the corner, catching a foul ball, and then going and sitting back down like it was no thing. And it has fake written all over it. It's really pretty obvious that it's fake, but I saw at least three or four people in my Facebook friend circle like post it and oh, this is amazing. This girl's my hero. Number one, if she actually did that, when would it get posted? Would it get posted in February when there's no baseball going on? Or would it get posted during the baseball season when it actually happened? Number one, not in early February. I'm sorry to be calling these people out. But number two...
No, I'm not,
because it's ridiculous. And number two, when I posted...
It's a couple years old.
Okay, so number two, it's a couple years old, and Jesse saw it a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's not from this year. It's a Gatorade commercial.
It's like in the vein of those Gatorade commercials where Michael Vick throws the ball, like, out of the stadium. Yeah. That was when it happened, when, like, Mike Vick before, like, pre-dogfighting. It's probably, like, 5 years old.
I don't think it's 5 years. I want to say it's like three or four.
But it looks the same, the way like, oh, yeah, all of a sudden she's like Spider-Man up the wall. No. Doesn't
she has
happen.
No reason to be. It's from a logic standpoint, and I don't even feel like it's worth discussing logically, but from a logical standpoint, she has no reason to be down in the corner by the foul pole.
Chasing a ball
50 to 75 feet from her chair.
And it's close to being fair. So what if she goes up and jumps for it, and then the ball's fair? And meanwhile, the outfielder's just kind of standing there.
You're really fired up about this.
It kind of made me mad that people were like, oh, it's totally real. No, it is not. Understand what you're looking at. Don't believe everything you see on the internet.
Well, here's the key.
Unless it's written on fansmanship.com.
The key thing is she catches the ball, and then she, you know, she does the whole stroll, the cocky stroll back to the... to her chair, tosses the ball to the outfielder, sits down in her chair, and pulls out a bottle of Gatorade and drinks it.
Aha. Uh-huh. What color?
Orange.
What's your favorite color?
Red.
Yeah.
I don't really drink Gatorade that much.
Okay. I like the purple. Purple drank. I like the purple Gatorade. A lot of people say it tastes kind of like cough syrupy, but I think it's like the most sugary, and that's probably why I like it. Yeah. I'm a big sugar fan.
That's why I don't drink Gatorade.
It's not.
The sugar.
It's not good for me. I usually try not to drink it either.
Off topic,
but on topic, because that was ridiculous. And that kind of got me started to think about what time period is this now? There is literally no baseball going on when my friend posted that about a month ago, and we're a month later and there's totally baseball going on. I was down, eating, a taco at one of my favorite taco shops in town here. And there was an Angels game on yesterday in spring training. And I said to myself, ooh, there you go. baseball is starting. I flew through Phoenix yesterday as well.
Yeah. And there's already great highlights out. There was at the A's Giants pregame, Josh Reddick took away two of Michael Morse's home runs.
So during the spring training game.
Yes.
So two separate at bats, he robbed Michael Morse homers.
And they're both amazing catches.
How's Michael Morse going to be this year?
He's a Giant, so bad. No.
I kind of feel like the Michael Morse pickup right now is so similar to the Aubrey Huff pickup before they won the championship. I just really like, I like Michael Morse a lot. I think that whatever happened in Seattle with him, right? He was in Seattle.
Right.
I just think that Seattle's, you know, we'll see. We'll see how he does. But I really feel like the Michael Morse signing, a lot of people think he's kind of over the hill, and it has been. It has virtually no, risk for the Giants.
It's a classic Giants signing.
It's a classic Giants signing. And I think Michael Morse is going to hit 20, 25 home runs this year. He's going to drive in 80 or 90 runs. And he's going to be somebody who you didn't think you were going to be worried about if you're facing him right now. But you're probably going to be... I mean, he hit two home runs, basically, in that game that got robbed.
I mean, he's a decent player. He was a decent player in Washington. It's a typical Giants, under-the-radar, washed-up outfielder trying to make a comeback, resurrect his career.
Okay. And injuries have been a huge deal for him, right? So
yes. The fact that I think that's part of what happened
if he can
in
stay
Seattle.
Healthy. Right. So if he can stay healthy, it's a great pickup for the Giants. I think it's interesting to think about, too, how some teams think so highly of their training staff. They say, well, he was hurt over there, but maybe, you know, maybe he wasn't getting the right the right kind of treatment or whatever. And so come over on our team and we'll get our trainers, you know, our training staff to look at it and to take a look. And I think the Giants are one of those teams that kind of believes that they can have those veterans who might have been hurt before, and Bruce Bochy can manage it, and they can have other, you know, their trainers manage it and get a solid 130 games out of Michael Morse or something like that. I think they'd be really happy with that this year.
I think 130 games is a fair assessment.
Yeah, it's kind of an over-under, right?
Yeah, I think if they get 133...
Actually, I'd put over-under at like 120 with Michael Morse if I was setting odds.
I think if they get more than 100, they'll be ecstatic.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So Josh Reddick made some nice catches. How good are the A's going to be this year? What do you think? Like, the A's went and they signed a bunch of relief pitchers, and that was kind of, they're bucking the trend again.
That's the new market inefficiency is signing.
Is it though?
Yes, that's what they've been doing. That's
it must be, right?
The strategy that it's, I mean, Moneyball is alive and well. It's not just on base percentage. It's finding a market inefficiency, and that's what they're chasing relief pitchers, and they're making
now
stockpiling draft picks.
The other thing that somebody said was, that I heard, like the other theory, besides it maybe being a market inefficiency, maybe not, but maybe you've also been allowed to spend a little bit more money, and maybe you didn't get a couple other guys who you wanted in free agency, so you may as well spend it and have an amazing bullpen.
Yeah.
I mean, just kind of a, I guess that's less of a, like, that's giving Billy Beane less credit, maybe, but maybe that's, at that point, you say to yourself, you know, maybe I didn't get, who did the Brewers sign? Oh, man. Matt Garza, I think. Maybe I didn't get Garza. I think he went to Milwaukee, but he was one of the free agents that was on the market, and there were a number of them on the market, and maybe they didn't get any of those. So they just said to themselves, okay, we have this money to spend, and yes, we're the A's, and yes, we don't like spending money, but let's go ahead and spend it on these guys. And if I need to, I can trade one of them at the trade deadline to a team. If we're out of it, I can trade one of those relievers and get something for it. Like you said, draft picks, young players. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they've been stockpiling.
Yeah. That's the A's in a nutshell.
I think they're going to be right in it again.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in it every year. It's going to be the A's and the Rangers down the stretch.
You know, what about the Angels?
What about the Angels?
Those poor, I mean, I kind of feel bad because for a second, fans were really excited. They were, you know, it seemed like they were doing the right things. They spent just so much money on such few players, though. And they overpaid Pujols and they overpaid Hamilton. And I guess if your other teams, you say, yeah, let them overpay those guys.
Yeah.
Right. You'd rather overpay like Kershaw if you're the Dodgers.
I don't think they overpaid him.
Which one? Who?
Kershaw.
Oh, right. Right.
It's
but even if they did, it's
actually
a
great deal. Like if you break it down and you take his option year out, which he's definitely going to take his option.
Totally.
I mean, or he's going to refuse it and get another contract. It's a great deal for both. I mean, I know it's really high, but.
And now the Angels are looking at Mike Trout and trying to pay him.
Have you seen the articles about how much Mike Trout's worth? Like the numbers are like in the 40 millions a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 10 year 300 is like a pretty accurate, like,
yeah,
estimate. That would be like my over under.
Yeah. He's going to get a ridiculous deal.
Somebody was saying he should take a 6 year, cause he's only like, what, 22. He should take like a 6 or 8 year deal right now. And then he'll be like 30 and he'll get another gargantuan deal in 6 or 8 years if he still is really good. I thought that was interesting.
He's going to be a wealthy man. He's already pretty wealthy, but
he's not. He makes like, I mean, okay, yeah, he is by like term, yeah, by regular people standards, but he makes like $400,000 a year.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay. He's going to be a really wealthy man. How's that?
He is.
Like buying an island. Wealthy.
So that'll be a story to look at, you know, for sure, like throughout March, is kind of, do the Angels sign Mike Trout? And how are all these contracts working out for teams? You know, you've seen now probably a good solid since like the original Manny Ramirez Red Sox deal. I remember when they signed him in, what was that, like 1998 or something like that.
Sounds right.
And I remember thinking, this is like next level stuff, and it's kind of escalated from there. But very few in the last 10 years, even I guess that's 15 years now, very few of those contracts have kind of ended up being value contracts for the team throughout the contract. Manny Ramirez produced like the whole time he was playing for the Red Sox, so fine. But not all those contracts have worked out like that. I mean, you've seen, you've seen other ones that really, the A-Rod deal, both A-Rod deals, I would argue.
Well, teams have learned that now, instead of paying people for what they've done, they're trying to lock them up. They're locking them up as young players and trying to buy their peak years. You know, that Evan Longoria was really one of the first.
So that's a next level kind of deal then. So yeah. there's the contrast. There's the Pujols deal versus the Longoria or Ryan Braun or whatever, where they're buying out some of their arbitration years.
Tulowitzki,
where they buy out arbitration years. They essentially overpay early to keep them, to have them locked up for 2 or 3 or 4 years after arbitration ends, keep them from going on the free agent market, like you said, during their peak years.
Yeah, and then let someone else pay for, like Pujols, pay for 33 through 38.
Right. Like 30 through 40, 32 through 42. I mean, he's locked up till he's like 43 or something stupid. Yeah. I mean, that was a dumb, dumb contract.
What is this, the year four of the deal?
Three?
It's 3 or 4, right? And there's 6 years left.
Oh my God.
And how many world championships? Wait, how many world championships did Luke,
so hard.
Did Luke predict?
Once no, he was, I don't think, I didn't hear.
I think it was 3. He said they're going to win at least 3 world championships now that they've signed Pujols.
To be fair, if the Dodgers would have signed Pujols, I would have said the exact same thing. I would have said the exact same thing had the Dodgers signed Pujols.
You can't do that with baseball. One player doesn't make it.
Right. And so it's really interesting. Like a lot of people were praising, even before the Tanaka signing, a lot of people were praising the Yankees for letting Cano go and instead spending that money on McCann and Beltran. And there was one other player they signed in the offseason.
Brian Roberts.
Right. Okay, great. So Brian Roberts is maybe a +2 war.
Yeah, plus if that, one. If he's healthy.
Okay, if he's healthy. McCann's probably like a +3 or +4. And Beltran's probably a +2 or +3 or something. I mean, whatever it is, spending that money on and filling all those holes, it's like market diversity. You know, yeah. you're filling a lot of holes for the same money that you would have paid one guy at one position who might be a +6 or something like that, but you'd be overpaying for that guy. And instead they got these other guys for, you know, I think 5 years or less.
Right.
So they didn't make as big a commitment there either. The Yankees were really smart this offseason, I thought. And we'll see how Tanaka works out.
They're not just throwing money at things anymore.
Right.
Like they used to.
Well, and you could say they threw money at Tanaka.
Well, yeah, but.
But there's some thought process that's easy to see.
Free agents like Tanaka don't hit the market anymore, because they get locked up to long-term deals. Just like, you know, Joey Votto, all these guys are not, these top players are all not hitting the market.
Carpenter never hit the market. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Wainwright.
Kershaw. Holiday. Holiday even.
Exactly.
Yeah. They're not going to let those guys, Matt Kemp. Even like Andre Ethier never hit the market. The Dodgers never even let him hit the market.
Right.
I mean, and he's not a top-level player. You know what I mean? So like,
no.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Dodger fans hope that he gets traded.
Well, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, platooning, and the problem is the two players that you would want to platoon in the Dodgers outfield, just to kind of jump around topics randomly.
Right.
But you have Kemp, you have Puig, you have Crawford, and you have Ethier in the outfield, along with Jock Peterson. You would love to platoon, to like trade one and platoon two of the Peterson, Crawford, and Ethier, except they're all left-handed hitters, I think. And so, you know, you'd love to give like Peterson a little bit of time this year, you know, maybe get some value for Crawford or get some value for Ethier. But the value for those guys is against right-handed pitchers. Crawford, you know, a little bit of both, I guess. And he was clutch in the playoffs last year. But those are the guys you would want to theoretically platoon maybe in left field, and play Puig and Kemp every day if they can handle it. Kemp's injury, but it's just that they're all left-handed hitters.
Yeah.
So I wanted to also, you know, kind of speaking of the Dodgers and teams that kind of buying up everything, you made a comment about the Dodgers and middle infielders.
Yes.
What are they doing?
Buying every Latin American middle infielder.
Every Cuban middle infielder.
Cuban specifically. Yeah. Cuban specific. I didn't want to be too specific because you never know. I mean,
but they signed Alex Guerrero.
Yeah. And then they signed some other shortstop.
Yeah, I can't remember who has an amazing name that I don't think I can pronounce.
And then they've got they have a 19-year-old shortstop that's in the system that's supposed to be really good, but I mean 19, he's pretty raw.
All right, I'm going to try it.
Yes.
His first name is Aris Bell. Erisbel. His last name is spelled Arrueberrueena. Like Arabuena is what you would think, and Barrena.
This is the guy who's friends with Puig growing up, right?
I think they played on the same.
I think
team.
Their families are friends.
Oh, they could be. Yeah, so,
I think that they were family friends.
So they know. I mean, they know each other for sure. And same with Alex Guerrero. I mean, they all know each other. Guerrero is kind of more low key. He's a little less flashy. He's a little more kind of a worker. The thing I think is going to be interesting to see, you know, last year with Puig, the Dodgers were like, we're not going to bring him up. We're not going to bring him up. We're not going to bring him up. And they finally needed to bring him up. So they did. Guerrero has been penciled into the starting, and he's a little older, I think, coming in, but Alexander Guerrero doesn't have any major league experience, doesn't have any minor league experience. He's going to be expected to come in and start maybe. And
his spring is going to be very interesting.
It's going to be the most interesting thing about the whole Dodgers team to watch, is can he earn a spot? How can he play for a month well enough for them to be comfortable with him going into the spring? We're not expecting him to go like Puig, hit like 500 in the spring or something. But if he, you know, I think if he can hit 260, 280,
oh yeah,
between 260 and 300, then he'll be the starting.
I think if he hits 250, he'll be starting
at second base.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy. I think he's got a little bit of pop, maybe a little more pop than Mark Ellis.
He has pop. And more pop than the normal second baseman. And then he is really good defensively.
Right.
So right. I think, like I said, you know, if they get 250, I think they'd be happy. But I almost think that they keep him at second base with a 230, 240.
Yeah, and they were saying he's pretty smooth defensively, that he could play shortstop as well.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see, too, you know, when Hanley gets a day off, who do they play in the middle? There's a couple guys, including Sean Viggins, who they have kind of in camp. To maybe fill those holes up the middle. It's kind of interesting. Elian Herrera and some of those other guys in the Dodgers system kind of haven't really ever panned out to play like second base. That's a guy who I would have loved to have seen get an opportunity to play more. And he just never has. And over the last probably 3 years, I always kind of thought, oh man, you know, maybe somebody like him will come up and do something. Not so much. And maybe that's just me being a over-optimistic Dodger fan.
I think the Dodgers are going after these middle infield types with an eye towards the future and possibly sliding Hanley over to third base when Uribe is done.
Uribe got another 2 years, so yeah. I'm not expecting much out of him in the first year based on previous things. Props to him for doing well. I guess Arispel, this other shortstop.
The other shortstop.
Hits like worse than Rey Ordóñez. He's like the worst. He's like a really bad hitter, but he's amazing defensively, apparently. So, you know, maybe a late defensive replacement or somebody like that, somebody to kind of fill like the Nick Punto role.
Yeah,
I guess eventually, not this year. I'm sure he'll play in Double A or something this year. But
and they've got the young. There's the 19-year-old. I don't know. His last name starts with a U, I think.
For the Dodgers?
Yeah. There's a 19-year-old shortstop out there too.
In the system.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about the Dodgers throughout the year. We'll talk more about you know, baseball and spring training. And as the season gets closer, we might even have Jesse on for some predictions about the season. What day is our fantasy draft?
I think it's the 23rd.
The 23rd. So we got about 3 weeks from today. Is it a Monday?
It's a Sunday.
It's the 22nd or 23rd. Okay. Our fantasy draft is in 3 weeks, and I haven't even looked at anything from this year. I barely know who my keepers are going to be. I'm still struggling we get two keepers, two pitchers and two hitters to keep. And I have Eric Hosmer, and I'm kind of like, oh man, he could have if he takes the next step this year. I mean, last year he put up, you know, really big points numbers in our league. But I also have Ryan Braun, and I also have somebody else who I'm, you know, pretty excited about keeping as well.
Who's the somebody else?
I don't
remember?
Jacoby Ellsbury.
Oh. I was going to say, you must be really excited about him.
That was the other Yankees signing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Ellsbury went to the Yankees.
So, right.
So the Yankees really did spend a lot of money this offseason.
They spent Cano, but instead of buying one player, they bought four.
Right, for a little. I mean, and you could argue that McCann and Beltran, I think, cost about as much per year as Cano does.
And I think they also were considering the fact that they're not going to have a shortstop next year.
Right, right. And they need to figure that out. So the Ellsbury thing is interesting. In Yankee Stadium, same division. I don't think he's going to fall off going from Fenway to Yankee Stadium, you know, in terms of any of his numbers. There's big alleys. There's, you know, there's a short porch in right field at Yankee Stadium. That'll be really good for Ellsbury. So Ellsbury and Braun are going to be my keepers, I think, over Hosmer. And I can pick a first baseman, Hosmer or somebody else, hopefully in the draft. It will be like something I have to – just a decision I have to make.
Yeah.
But you got a trade offer recently, not in this league, but another
league.
And I kind of wanted to, from a fantasy baseball perspective, explore it a little bit. The trade offer was –
Well, it was
Who
kind
do you
of,
have?
It's just negotiation at this point.
Ooh.
But it's for...
No official offer yet.
Yeah. They're looking for Matt Moore or Brandon Phillips off of my... And this is a league where you... And JD's in this league, actually.
They want Matt Moore or Brandon Phillips.
Well, I think and, but... Those
oh,
are the
they
players,
want both. Okay.
That's the players they're interested in.
Okay.
But this is a strange league because there's not really a draft. You only draft based on what you drop because you keep every player on your team for as long as you want. And JD's in this league.
Right.
So it's really a long-term investment of time.
Right. So if you think somebody's garbage, you can get rid of them and draft a new person. How do you base the rounds of the draft?
On how many players people drop. So you can drop 10 players. So if I drop 10 players, I'll get a first-round pick. If I drop 9 players, I'll get a second-round pick.
What about the order?
The order is determined... So there's an order based on where you finished last year,
mm-hmm.
and then so that takes precedence, and then it's from who dropped what players.
Right.
So if I
for each
drop,
round.
If I have a pick before JD, but JD drops 10 players, he'll get a first-round pick,
right.
and then the second-round pick, I will pick before JD.
If you drop 9
if
players.
If I drop 9 players, yeah.
Right. So you just go through each round, and each round more and more drafts or more and more picks happen
yeah.
Because as you get to the 10th round, everybody drops at least one person, I would imagine.
Yeah, I might drop one.
Right.
But I'm not really.
Okay.
I'm
so
not really going to drop anybody.
So you have Matt Moore, who is a 25-year-old, who will be 25 this year.
Yeah.
Right-hander. Who's
lefty.
Been,
he's a left-hander.
Left-hander. Sorry, I was picturing. You know who I was picturing when you said Matt Moore?
Hmm.
The guy they traded to the Royals.
James Shields.
Sorry. That's why I was like confused that he was only 24. Yeah, so Matt Moore is a 25-year-old left-hander for the Rays.
Yeah.
Tell me about...
This is, I think, a make-or-break year for him, so I'm hesitant to trade him. Everybody, when he came up, everybody said he was going to be the ace of the Tampa rotation.
Well, he did go 17-4 last year with a 1.29 whip and
his
pretty
numbers,
good numbers. Only 150 innings, so he's not going super deep into games, but...
Well, he was hurt. For half the season, for part of the season.
And he still got 17 wins.
Yeah. No, he started out amazing, and then he had like a month and a half fall off where
okay.
he was garbage.
Okay.
And then he went back to mediocre
mm-hmm.
to finish the season. But yeah, I mean, he got 17 wins. He had a decent year last year. It's just, he hasn't gone over that hump. And a lot of, you know, when Kershaw first started.
Like the hump between what, though? Like the hump between maybe like a a second or third starter in your rotation to to an ace in a fantasy in a 12 team fantasy.
When he
rotation.
Came up, everybody said he was going to be unbelievable because he was very polished in the minors.
Well, in his first year at age 22, he had a 14.5 strikeouts per nine. Well, he only pitched 9 innings. Okay, fine. But his second year, last year, he pitched 177 innings in his second year before last, and put up again pretty good numbers.
So I have a theory on pitchers, and basically third-year starting pitchers is I tend to target third-year starting pitchers. And this is technically going to be his...
Is that kind of like 20... Was it 27 or 28-year-olds?
27-year-olds are good breakout candidates.
Right, right.
And third-year starting pitchers. But with left-handers, they take a little bit longer to develop for some reason. And I don't know enough to know why that is. But I remember, Kershaw was... the first couple of years of his career was it took him to get over that hump, and it's a wildness issue, and Matt Moore has that same thing, so I could potentially, if I traded Matt Moore, be trading away an ace.
Well, and to your point, for a guy who went 17-4, he only had a 2.6 WAR, which is interesting, right, to think about as far as the difference there. 3.29 ERA, 116 ERA plus, 1.2 WHIP, which was better than the previous year.
Yeah, so his stats were a little bit empty.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he could finally put it together if he's healthy this year and figures it out.
I would be totally hesitant to drop him.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Right. I'm not excited to trade Matt Moore by any means.
Right.
But the other guy, Brandon Phillips, and Brandon Phillips was one of the best second basemen in fantasy baseball for a very long time.
He was born about a month and a half after I was. he is 32. 32? Yeah, he's 32. He'll be 33 this year, just like me. And so Brandon Phillips is in his 12th year, I think, in the majors, and came up with Cleveland and then went to Cincinnati. He's an all-star, 1-2... three-time All-Star. He's won Gold Gloves 4 times.
Yeah, he's been one of the top second basemen in fantasy for a very long time.
But a lot of the sabermetricians talk about him being a little bit overrated. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe his numbers are completely empty. He put up 100 RBI, but really had nothing else. I mean, he had some home runs.
Right.
For second base, sure, if you're in a league that goes after that stuff. But I think that Brandon Phillips is no longer a mainstay at second base.
He's kind of on the decline. I mean, he's still probably somebody who needs to be on. He's still a starting second baseman in a 10-team fantasy league, to go to like fantasy baseball nerd talk. But he's probably a lower half draft pick of all the second basemen.
Right.
So if he was on your team and you had to start him, you wouldn't be super stoked about that. You'd kind of always be looking for maybe another option too. There was some talk about him getting traded for Andre Ethier or some kind of deal in that direction being made in the offseason. And I just didn't really like that. I mean, I think you can get better maybe value. And I think expecting Brandon Phillips to be a key 3-4-5 hitter in your lineup is probably not going to happen for a guy who's 33 on a successful team. You're probably going to want to expect if you're a really good team and Brandon Phillips is in your lineup, I'd love him hitting like 7th.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but that's not what Cincinnati's doing with him.
Correct. He's hitting 3rd.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. That's the big difference.
No, he hits behind Joey Votto.
4th.
He was hitting cleanup.
Yeah.
That's where all those RBI came from Joey Votto and Sinshu Chu.
Right.
But
he was only a 1.6 WAR last year. His highest has been like almost 5 3 years ago. And he's just kind of on the decline. He went from 4.9 to 3.8 to 1.6 the last 3 years. And you don't see 33-year-olds kind of bounce back with an amazing WAR. Like, it just doesn't happen.
And that's one of the reasons why I probably will. I'd love if I traded Brandon Phillips and got good value in return. I mean, I think he's overrated with players because they see the flashy numbers. They see the 18 home runs and the 103 RBIs. And they're like, oh, I want that guy at second base. So,
right.
I'm more than happy to move him and then put like a Ben Zobrist at second base, who's going to give me stolen bases a little bit.
In terms
of
your fantasy team.
On my fantasy team.
Right.
Yeah. Fantasy.
Yeah. And Ben Zobrist is one of the most versatile fantasy players you'll find around as far as a middle infielder and outfielder.
He can do a lot of stuff.
And he hits well enough at all the positions to make him just super useful as kind of a flex guy, a guy to be able to move around. So I thought that was an interesting early season trade talk in fantasy baseball that that I wanted to go over. And who are they trying to offer you for Matt Moore or Brandon Phillips?
They told me that they would give me a closer or a third round draft pick.
Arch.
And I was like, no.
For Matt Moore, I'd want like a first. I would want them to take the risk. But I guess in this league, though, there's not any good players even in the first round that are Matt Moore level.
You're just taking flyers on random prospects.
Right. So, yeah, Matt Moore is more solid than anybody else you could sign.
Yeah. If I could get – he's got Carlos Gomez on his lineup and on his team. If I could get like a Carlos Gomez, Brandon Phillips using the position scarcity principle to try and sell him on it.
Yeah.
Then I would be extremely happy with that because Carlos Gomez was amazing.
Yeah, second base isn't a great position, but if you're in the bottom half, it's kind of like catchers in that way. If you're not in the top like 4 or 5 second basemen, you may as well be 8th or 9th,
yeah.
I think, because you know it's a crapshoot after that. And so, you know, there's definitely like a tier there that drops off pretty hard, a lot like I said, like catchers.
And here's why he's looking for a second baseman. His second base options right now are Yerickson Profar and Josh Rutledge.
So he has also looked into the future. He has also bet on the future, which is fine. But
he's, you know, Profar is such a gamble. There's no way of knowing what he's going to do.
All right. Is he going to play shortstop this year with Rangers?
No, they signed Andrus, but they traded Kinsler to Detroit.
Right.
So he's going to be the starting second baseman, which, you know.
Is he better defensively than Andrus, though?
I don't know that. I don't think so. Okay. Andrus is an amazing second base or a shortstop.
Yeah. Profar can just hit. Is that the deal? They've always just tried to find a place for
him. I think he's solid as a defensive player, too. He's better than Kinsler.
He was way hyped last year, though. So.
Well, he got bounced around as a utility player, and that's what the excuse everyone's making for him is that because he was a utility player, a role that he's not accustomed to, he struggled a little bit with it. And this year, he's going to be locked in at second base, and so a lot of people are betting on him as being a big sleeper or breakout candidate.
Because his name was all over the place last year. Everybody thought, hey, are they going to trade Andrus? Are they going to, where are they going to find a place for him? But they'll find a place for him because he can hit so good, because he's such a good player.
Yeah.
They didn't really last year. I mean, he got some plate appearances. And
he played third base. He played second base. He played DH.
Right. But this year, it's like you said, he's kind of locked in and they're really depending on him to play. There's a lot to talk about in baseball, and I'm really excited about this season. Like I said, I flew into and out of Phoenix yesterday, and all I kind of wanted to do was just kind of on one part of me really just wanted to like walk out the airport, rent a car, go over to Camelback Ranch, watch some pitchers and catchers, watch some, you know, some spring training going on. And the games are starting. They're on this week. If you see baseball, that's why. And it's a pretty exciting thing.
Yep.
Awesome.
Can't wait.
Yeah. So thanks again, Jesse, for coming over. We'll have you over more before the season starts and during the season. And talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great day. See ya.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Front page of the news.